On this episode of the Dudes and Dads podcast, we talk with our friend Andrew Wood about his book, Hero, Ghost, Villain, A Guide for Imperfect Dads Who Want to Grow, Lead, and Love Well.
Joel, speaking of imperfect.
Oh, hey, you know what?
I launched the music before it was anywhere time.
Well, you know what? I'm sure our guests were really confused, and they're like, well, we've started the show twice now. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Dudes and Dads podcast. Glad to have each and every one of you along for the ride. Love that you've joined us. Excited about our conversation. Andy, I'm just going to be just full disclosure. You and I are both in the same boat on this. We are in a matter of just a few days.
Oh, yes.
Countdown.
Eight to be exact.
Yes, countdown.
For me, I don't know when you leave.
Same. Countdown to head down to sunny Florida for the Flourishing Conference.
We're excited. So you probably will see some gas station coffee reviews from
us.
Because that's what we do.
Yeah.
More together.
We're gonna review some gas station coffee because you know that's where the finest roasts come from in this country. You never know what you're going to find at gas station coffee. It has in various viscosities, depths of flavor.
You just never know.
Yeah. So I am, boy, it's been a long haul. It has been cold here.
Cold
in the teens today, Andy, just to drive this point home. The temperature from the morning to the afternoon increased a total of 32 degrees. And yet, we were still below freezing at the highest temp. So
I know when I left for church this morning, said -5, but at one point when I was driving, it said -15.
Yeah. It's a special kind of cold. And maybe this is our age, Andy. It used to be, I didn't think about this, but right around this time of year when we've had something like this happen, this kind of weather, I just go, what? I ask why I live. I ask why I live where I live.
Yeah.
And our guest who's from a little farther down south, maybe he'll be able to tell us, like, you know, Are we being reasonable here, or do we just need to just get our act together and toughen up a little bit? I don't know. So, hey, Andy, as so many people know, we have so many fantastic supporters of the show, people that write us, that cheer us on, that shout our names from across the street at inappropriate times when I'm trying to drive. And yet we're grateful for each and every one of them. And so we're thankful for all those supporters, but we also have official supporters as well, Andy.
We do. We want to thank Everence, because Everence supports us, their credit union, helping you meet everyday banking needs with member-focused savings, loan options. Learn more at everence.com/banking. Credit union products are federally insured by NCUA.
Thank you, Everence Financial.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, hey, without further ado, we do want to introduce our guest for the show, Mr. Andrew Wood. Andrew, hey, welcome, Andrew.
Thanks, man.
Oh, man.
Good to be here.
And you've got the Tennessee flag behind you, which I'm sure you do, because anybody that's from Tennessee should know this, what the three stars are actually for. Do we know?
What I usually like to tell people is we're super spiritual in Tennessee. So it's the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Bingo.
So,
okay. Great. Okay. We'll go.
It's when we talk about our state, we do so with West, Middle, and East Tennessee.
Okay.
So the three stars represent the three regions
Understood.
Of the state of Tennessee.
Gotcha. Understood.
I like the Trinity better, but yeah. we'll go with the.
I'll be honest with you. I was like, he was going to tell me it was like representing three Confederate generals or something, and then I was going to be like, oh, okay. The region of Tennessee. That's fantastic. That's fantastic.
Too soon. Too soon, man.
Yeah. Right. Soon. Exactly.
Did you know that our guest actually came as a recommendation from a former guest of ours?
Oh, we love the guests that keep on giving guests.
So Mark Hyde.
Mark. So many Marks in our life.
Yes, we do. Of the fame of the Real Talk Christian podcast.
Yeah.
Said he messaged me one day on Facebook and said, dude, you have got to check out Andrew.
Andrew on. Okay. So we're going to learn lots of things. As we've mentioned at the top of the show, Andrew is an author. He is, I was saying before we started recording, he has birthed a book, which is for many authors, that's the way they describe it, whether they be male or female, bringing something to life feels like about right. So, Andrew, hey, we were going to learn all about the book this evening, but before we do, we always like to ask about the dad stats. We want to hear more about you, your family, where you come from, what you're into. If you got any weird hobbies, we're into that as well. And, anything that's also a stereotypical Central Tennessee, we'd love to hear that as well, just to further our for us Northerners to further the stereotypes of
First off, it's Middle Tennessee. It's not Central. We're not fancy. It's Got middle. Second, Mark is a great dude, and I will say, you know, they have a bunch of kids.
Yes, they do.
And I speak a lot, and I spoke at a church where Beth was at, and that was what fired her up to start the adoption process.
Oh,
so
great.
You're That's welcome. Awesome. You're welcome.
Amen.
Indiana. And so, I would say, yeah, for me, I'm a dad to six kids, a husband to one wife. I was on a show the other day and they were like, Andrew is a dad and a husband to six. So I was like, well, that's not true. So I work in ministry.
His book sales tanked immediately after that.
Yeah. Like, hold on, we can't have you come speak. We didn't know you had six wives, So I have six kids. Our oldest is he's about to be 15 in March. And then we have a soon to be 13 year old, just one that just turned 10, one that just turned 8, one that just turned 2, and then one that is 5 months old.
Bless your heart.
Wow.
So writing a book, very similar to giving birth, as you said, so now I can relate to my wife. She gave birth to six children and I wrote one book. So, yep.
I'm sure the two of you can really commiserate together.
Right, the pain will be equal there. Right?
Yeah. Also, I didn't take an epidural. So I think there's something to that as well.
Yeah, buddy.
Our last one, my wife didn't do an epidural, and he was the biggest out of all of them, yep, 9 pounds, 15 ounces.
Yep.
And so she's a champ.
Proving again that our wives do get amnesia and they don't remember previous pregnancies or previous births. They're like, oh, they go it fresh every time. Like mentally, they're not remembering apparently what it's like each time. It's amazing. Andrew. Yeah. So, and you and your wife have been married. How long have y'all been married?
Yeah, so we'll be married. It'll be 20 years this year.
Awesome.
In September. Attaboy. Yeah, September will be 20 years. And I'm born and raised Tennessean. I don't get paid to be an evangelist for Tennessee, but I am one nonetheless. And so I love this state. And I would ask you the same thing. Why do you still live up there?
Exactly.
Why
don't you live here?
Exactly.
We do love vacationing in your state whenever possible. Yeah. Truth be told. And I will say, Andrew, my brother, if he's here, this is my brother Benjamin, he's currently living out west, and they are strongly considering calling Tennessee their next home. So I'm just going to put that out there. I'm going to put it out there and speak it out into existence and see if he's going to call me and be like, what did you say on the show?
Well, a lot of folks around the country have been been making that decision.
The taxes are pretty good, I hear. So
taxes are great. Yeah. Taxes are great. But I'll just throw this out there. I don't want to get controversial. You're coming here for a reason.
Yes.
Let's not change it. Okay. Yes, that's all I'm going to say. Yes. That's all I'm going to say.
Amen. Amen. Andrew,
especially if you're coming from out west.
Yeah. Fair enough.
You're coming here for a reason. Yes. Let's not go crazy.
Attaboy. And Andrew, I think you'd like my brother already. So he's not going to pollute your, we're keeping it here. This for a reason. It's beautiful. Okay. So Andrew, man, you wrote this book, Hero, Ghost, Villain, A Guide for Imperfect Dads Who Want to Grow, Lead, and Love Well. Which I think speaks to basically everything that I care about at any given time.
Right.
Right. And this obviously, as all books do, as all work like this does, it came from a place. I would just be interested to hear. I mean, because this book came out this past summer in August. Mm-hmm. I would just be interested, like, what stirred this book up within you? Mm-hmm. What got this project going to begin with?
Yeah, for me, I mean, I'm not your, maybe I am a typical guy. I don't know, but I've always wanted to be a daddy, like, mm-hmm. and not a father and not a dad, but a daddy. Like mm-hmm. I call my dad daddy. I just got off the phone with him before I got on this call. And so I got married when I was 22 years old, because we wanted to. And one of my first questions to my wife was, hey, when are we going to have kids? And, mm-hmm. That process didn't come as fast as either of us hoped. There was some struggle in the beginning of just And we really wrestled with, man, maybe the Lord has some other plans for us. And then once we got pregnant with that first one, man, it was like, the Lord said, okay, now be ready. And here they came. So, but through that process, I also, I started leading a pregnancy center in Knoxville, Tennessee, and just interacting with young women, young men that were thrown into parenthood and they weren't ready for that.
Yep.
And I just remembered, like, my parents divorced after being married for 22 years, but my dad doubled down. He didn't disengage. He actually engaged more. My stepdad is still a pillar in my life. I mean, and who I call on constantly. My granddaddy just celebrated 74 years with my grandmama, being married. And so I had, in my grandma and papa on my dad's side, we're married for 60 plus years and we're incredible humans. And so I had men around me, dads around me that weren't perfect, but cared enough to show up and be intentional. And so when I started leading at that pregnancy center, we started a dad's class for these young dudes that just didn't have those men around them. And so what we were trying to do is, how can we give them that which they don't see?
Yeah.
And so they don't know how to be a good dad. No one ever showed them. No one modeled it for them. They don't know how to be a good husband. No one ever showed them or modeled it for them. So we brought them together and we actually met around, we didn't meet in the pregnancy center. We met around the city. So our first meeting in that dad's class was in a tire shop. A friend of mine owned a tire shop and I was like, hey, can I bring these dads in? We'll feed them. I'll talk to them about, I'll challenge them for about 10 minutes. We'll talk, we'll show them how to set up a pack and play. Which I'm pretty convinced that that's what you do in hell for eternity, yeah. Setting up and tearing up back and play.
I agree.
Yeah. And so, and then I was like, then your manager at the shop can show them how to change oil, how to work on the car, how to check on the spare tire. Every time we did that, their spare tire was flat. No lie. 100% of the time. Yep. So check your spare tires, make sure they have air in them. But because of that, then I had more opportunities and I started working through this process of hero, ghost, villain. Mm-hmm. We all want to be the hero. Sometimes we're the ghost and sometimes we're the villain. Sometimes we're all three of those in the same day. Mm-hmm. And so that started that process with that group of guys. And then I was asked to write a fatherhood study for a platform that goes out across the country for young dads just trying to figure it out. And so I wrote a study based on that. And then I thought, you know what, how can I compile all this together that either if they go through the study or just a dad wants to pick up a book that's, you know, 70 pages or, you know, something like that long, a few questions at the end of each chapter. It's not, I mean, I've had guys reach out to me. I haven't read a book in 10 years and I read this while my car was getting worked on. Mm-hmm. Or I had my youth pastor, I sent him a copy and he went, I sat down when I got back from the mailbox and I read the whole thing. That was my goal.
Yeah.
I wanted people to be able to approach this and really just wrestle with what kind of man they are. Mm-hmm. How can I show up and how can I recognize when I'm not showing up and make the corrections, and no better time than now to start. And so I think there's always this sense of, for me, of, is it my ego? Like, does anybody want to read anything that I've written? I speak for a living, you know, those type things. And it's like, I don't know, but I just really felt like I was hearing from folks and seeing a need. I go into airports and I just look around. And sometimes jokingly, I text my brothers and I say, man, our boys are going to be kings in our current culture. Right. And we just need to keep doing what we're doing and they're going to be able to be kings. I mean, my soon to be 15-year-old changes diapers, gives his little siblings a bath. And I'm like, dude, you're preparing yourself for that future. Yep. And that's how I was raised as well. I think it makes a difference. But so many of these young men today, they just don't have it being modeled. Yep. And so I think it's on us as men of the community to step up in those scenarios and model it the best we can.
Sure. Let's break it down a little bit. The three different types that you're talking about in this book and how you would define them. So hero, ghost, and villain. What does that mean to you when you say a dad is a hero, a dad is a ghost, a dad is a villain?
Yeah, I think the goal for every man is to be the hero. I mean, up until very recently, my son would have told you I was stronger than The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, which is, I mean, insane.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, of course I am, but no, it's but that's the, obviously we want to be the hero for our kids. Mm-hmm. And so that means that's not capes and, you know, all that stuff, but it's being engaged. It's, mm-hmm. it's my dad coming from the milk barn. My dad was a dairy farmer, in his barn clothes to my ball game. Mm-hmm. It's my stepdad showing up for three young men that were not his own, but treating us as we were his own. It's things like that. It's engaging, being intentional, not just being present. I think for many guys, it's like, well, I'm there, I pay the bills, I put food on the table, I provide. But the hero is kind of, you know, I think we all understand that. The ones that we tend to fall into would be the ghost. And sometimes it's the ghost, like we used to see this at the pregnancy center. A young lady comes to the pregnancy center and the guy's literally nowhere to be found. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a ghost. But some of us are married and are providing, but we come home from work and we are a ghost. We are not engaged intentionally. We are not engaged spiritually. We are not engaged emotionally. We just are a body in the room. We come in, mm-hmm. sit on the recliner, sit in the chair, scroll our phone. We're not engaged with, yeah, that's the wife's job, or that's the youth pastor's job, or that's the kids pastor's job. And so we're the ghost, or we're the villain. We're the one that no one wants to show up because we just cause chaos and destruction. Mm. Or when they hear the garage door open, they get knots in their stomach because they don't know what man is coming through the door that night. And so those are the things that we have to fight against, because, you know, where I come from and with this mindset is the spiritual, the serpent is going to continue to do what he did in the garden and create a division between the man and his kids and the man and his wife. And he's been intentional of that since the garden. So we have to combat that. You know, I'm working on something right now where if there's no battle, what's the point of putting on the armor? Mm-hmm. Well, we're told to put on the full armor. Why? Because it's battle. We're going to fight, and we got to do that daily. And so you got to fight against being that ghost and that villain. And for some of us, you're like, yeah, but I'm past that. And there's a lot of making up I have to do. And I would say yes. Mm-hmm. And today's the day to start, to strive to be the hero that, that the Lord's called you to be.
You know, we talk about, I think it's fair to say we have an epidemic of fatherless, particularly, I mean, Andy and I talk about our boys, but just our kids, fatherless children in general, guys who have just kind of, who have disappeared. I think the ghost is an apt, metaphor there, who've kind of disappeared from life. What do you think it is? Like when you've worked with guys, when you've had conversation with guys, what is driving them to this ghost-like behavior? Because I think it's for some of us, like I have the hardest time in my mind, if I'm really honest sometimes, like imagining not being around, not being mm-hmm. present, not being engaged. Because they're just, you know, within our, I think it's like within our DNA and how we're designed, it's like, you know, we have responsibilities. We have a role. We have a need to be step up, to be protectors, to be providers, those sort of things. How does one find themselves in this ghost, in this kind of ghost land, ghost, position? What do you think leads men to that place?
Yeah, I think a lot of times it's, if you tell folks long enough to sit down and shut up, eventually they listen. Mm-hmm. And I think the culture and the world, and sometimes the church, let's be honest, have feminized everything. So that men show up and they're like, I'm not really sure what's here for me. Mm. You know, I'm not interested in that. I'm not, I can't do that, or I don't preach, or I don't, I'm just not into those things. And, you know, or they've been told that's a woman's job, or now we have culture that they can't even define what a woman and a man is. And so it's like, well, where do I even fall? And if you do stand up and protect, or you do a hard thing, you're toxic now. You know, that's what the culture has kind of labeled these things.
Yeah.
And I just think there's what I'm seeing from a younger crop of folks is they are hungry. That's why oftentimes what you see is the voices that are discipling them are discipling them to nonsense, because they're just trying to they're looking for someone to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, in my opinion, it's the godly men that need to step into that void and give them something worth following.
Yeah.
It is looking at my granddaddy and saying that man continues to serve mm-hmm. my grandmama.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why my fifth child is named Duke, because my granddaddy is named Duke. That and I wanted to make sure, like, I don't know how many more boys I'm going to get. One of them's going to have his name.
Yeah.
And so these are opportunities for us to step in those moments. And we just have to, when the world's calling out and yelling at young men today and saying things like, you're toxic, we don't need you. And I've even heard stories where I've seen it in marriage counseling where a woman says to a man, you know, he doesn't even change diapers. And the man in marriage counseling goes, well, that I did change diapers. And the one time I did it,
sure,
you critique the snot out of it.
Sure. Yep.
And so I'm out. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to continue to just get the negative. I think men need to be affirmed. And celebrated that we're making the effort. And sometimes it looks different. But again, if you know, I always take this back to theology. The enemy can use passive men as much as he can use overly aggressive, abusive men.
Yep.
And he's fine either way.
Sure.
He has no issue. Okay, I'll just make you passive and I can use that. Or I can make you overly aggressive and abusive and I can use that. And I think for a godly man to step in and go, no, I'm going to be here. I'm going to be present. I'm going to take a responsibility, love my kids well. Because again, we're not just raising our children.
Mm-hmm.
We're raising their children and their children. And the legacy is going to continue.
Mm-hmm. What are some ways that you've seen some habits that men can adopt to help transform their relationships with their kids from that either ghost villain to up to that hero?
I would say just look your kids in the eye. I mean, one thing for me is, and believe me, I mean, I've raised my voice today. So it isn't as if I've got this all figured out. This is not from a place of listen to me. I know what I'm doing. It's from a place of, it's a struggle, man. It's a struggle every day. But it's recognizing in those moments. I love my dad. I don't remember that man ever apologizing to me for anything. But I've apologized. I've sat down with my kids and said, look, daddy stepped in it. That wasn't okay.
Mm-hmm.
I've sat down with them and said, and there's stories in the book where I've said, like, I messed up. You know, you were wrong and you deserve discipline, but the way I handled it was not appropriate.
No.
And I need you to know that that is not the model that I'm trying to lay out. And I think we have to at some point be willing to do that. I think if you're a dad to girls, they need to know that their identity is not wrapped up in what they see in the mirror. They need to know their identity is not wrapped up in what the world says about them. But what God says about them. And oftentimes the first glimpse of God they get is their parents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how are we modeling that for them? Which means they also need to see me loving on their mama. They mm-hmm. need to see me, being the husband as well. And so, I think it's also getting up in the middle of the night. It's changing diapers. I used to sit down with young men and I would say, hey, what your girl thinks sexy right now, once this baby's here, that's going to change. Once this baby's here, they're going to say, my man gets up and changes diapers. Mm-hmm. My man gets up and heats a bottle. My man like goes up and picks up diapers when we need them and wipes. And like, it's a different mindset that doesn't make you less of a man. If anything, it makes you more of a man.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that is needed. And I think oftentimes we think that's a feminine thing. And I think we can be masculine dudes that go, no, I'm going to change that diaper.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to be like weird about it. I mean, I grabbed a diaper a while ago. My wife had It was just sitting there on the couch. I was like, oh, he had a Jack had a blowout. And she's like, yeah. And I picked it up and got it all over me. You know, and it's like, yeah, this is what we signed up for.
It just happens.
And so that's just part of it.
Yeah. Andrew, I think this is something you mentioned earlier, and Andy and I would both be kind of in this camp, and many others are. And I'm just thinking about the time of, you know, talking about age of getting married young. And how that ties into being ready for real responsibility, being ready for real, because I mean, in my opinion, and I think anybody in the room, listen, if you're going to get married, you need to be able ready to, you're going to have like, if we're getting married, we're having kids, you know, we need to be ready to have kids anytime, right? And that's going to be the reality. And you know, I just think of, you know, I spend so much time thinking about young men in their early 20s who, you know, who are just struggling to find themselves, let alone be a husband, let alone be a father. And so what they do, I mean, right now, so the average age for first marriage for men, I think we just clicked up and I got to check. This is where we have our trusty production. Average age for men in America, first marriage. So average age for first marriage for men in America, I think we're going to see if I'm right. I think it's close to 30 years old now. And, you know, I was married, like yourself, I was married at 20, 22. My wife and I were both 22. I tell people all the time, I would not have done it any other way. Mm-hmm. Because I was still in college. My wife had just graduated college. I was still in college. We were in the time, you know, we were in the middle of a recession. Things were tough. And it formed our relationship, right? Like we got real. And then, you know, 3.5 years later, we're pregnant with our first kid. And, you know, I just would not trade that for anything in the world. And yet we just see men. I think right now, my biggest concern is they are just pushing back kind of this extended adolescence. They're just pushing back those key responsibilities. I'm sure your father would be the same. You know, my parents were married young. My grandfather, it was, you know, he graduated high school, he got married, he was working the family farm and a job in the factory, had, you know, so the house, three children by the time he was 25, and it was like off to the races. I mean, Andrew, when we kind of paint those kind of pictures, does that seem like, are we just being nostalgic? Are we just wishing for the good old days, or what do you think? Are those values to be pursued?
I mean, I would. First off, it sounds like your grandfather is a Southerner. I don't. Maybe he's not. But, everything you just explained sounds like he's from the South. But I would say, yeah, my granddaddy was eight years old. He was not eight. He was 18 years old when he married my grandmama, and so. You know, for me, there were a couple things. I'm such a big romantic. So when I was thinking about marrying my wife, there was a few things that I included in the proposal. Was it makes financial sense for us. If we ever want to get to 60 and 70 years, we need to do that now. And I want to have kids. So that's how romantic I am. So my wife was like, oh, this is going to be great. But I do think we have done a disservice, and men have been guilty of this. Even when I hear men say things like, my daughter's not going to date till she's 35 and I got a shotgun and all these things, I'm like, no, what I want to do is form what kind of man my daughter would even entertain the thought of being with. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that. I want to form, my wife and I want to form what kind of wife my sons would look to be with one day. And so for me, I think there's a reason why we're seeing a decline across the board, not just in marriage, but in having children, because some of that we have to own, because these young folks are going, well, if marriage is what mom and dad are have at home, I don't want that. Mm-hmm. And that's on us. So if what we are showing them is not attractive, then that's on us. Mm-hmm. And if what we are showing them in parenting is not attractive, then that's on us. But also the culture is saying, I mean, the culture actually says you can't have your baby and your dreams. You have to pick both.
Yeah.
And I would say that is a lie from the pit of hell. You can 100% have both. Mm-hmm. Now your dreams may change, and they, in matter of fact, they do. It's why I don't encourage people to get tattoos at 18, because you're going to change. Yeah. If I would have done that right now, I would have a basketball with a number in it right here. Come on. And so we have to get to a place of encouraging. Now, I'm not saying go be an idiot and just go marry the first person you run into. That's moronic. But it would make sense to, when I was dating growing up, it was very clear to anybody that, hey, I don't date unless I think this is a possibility, mm-hmm. that marriage is down the road. I wore a True Love waist ring. I mean, I was that kid. And so I remember telling, like, when I was interning at the legislature in Nashville, a senior in college, telling folks that I'm engaged, about to get married, and they would say things like, "How do you know?" And I'm like, I just know. But if you just keep waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, I don't know what to tell you. Like, mm-hmm. You're always gonna think there's something else, and that's what we're finding right now, is a lot of folks are hitting the 35 and the 40, and they're going, "Oh no," mm-hmm. and then they're, you know, I mean, I just thank the Lord I didn't have to deal with dating apps. I mean, we didn't, that wasn't a thing.
Geez,
yeah. And so my gosh, I couldn't imagine what you're dealing with, now. And so I would encourage folks to get married, have babies. You're not going to regret that. There's an Amish proverb, and I talk about it in the book. I'm not Amish, but I'm Amish-ish, I like to tell people. And so in the book, there's an Amish proverb that says, if the grandfather's convictions become the father's traditions, they become the son's inconveniences. And if we're looking around right now, we are seeing marriage used to be a conviction, then it became a tradition. And for many now, it's an inconvenience. Yeah. Same thing with having children.
Yeah.
And so we have to pull that back, and we have to be raising our children to say, marriage is beautiful. It's a gift. Having children is beautiful. It's a gift. It's not easy. There's going to be days where it's terrible. Mm. There's days in my house where it's like, it's so loud. There's so much crying. And then the other night, a lot of them were staying at family and friends' houses. And it was like, oh,
yeah,
it's quiet. Mm, yeah. One day it's going to be that.
Yeah.
And so we have to, at some point, show them that, hey, this is a beautiful thing. And it is and even, When I go speak around the country and talk about my grandma and granddaddy who have never really traveled anywhere, they get standing ovations when I say they've been married for 74 years.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah,
well, why is that? Because even strangers, even secular folks go, there's something different about that. Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's beautiful.
Yeah. Our production assistant has the official number of the average age. What is that, Mark?
Yep. So the median age for marriage in 2024 is 30.2 to 30.6 years.
Yeah. So that's a whole lot of life that a young man is living before having the level of responsibility of relationship or children or whatever
else.
And
then we also got a question from Mark Hyde on Facebook. He says,
Mr. Mark Hyde,
is the older age of marriage extended adolescence or more the fear of divorce rates and women being quote unquote boss babes? From a culture standpoint, that's what it seems to be, and it's bled into the church. Your thoughts?
Ooh.
Well, first off, I think a lot of stuff is bled into the church. That is for unfortunate truth. I do think there is, we have to, and when I say we, I mean the church, I mean men, I mean secular society. We have to figure out why right now, when you look at the data, young men are trending traditional conservative, and young women are trending the opposite. I mean, they're not even in the same sphere, and that is not sustainable. That is a dangerous place to be when you're thinking about who I'm going to marry, who I'm going to spend the rest of my life with. And so I think culture, and now it's in the church, has struggled to really paint marriage as what it is, a beautiful picture. You know, it represents the Christ relationship with the bride. I mean, with us, with the church. And so the sacrificial love for, that the man has for his wife. And in some cases it is men not being the men we need to be that even looks attractive to a woman. And in other cases, it is going back. I hate to go back to the garden again, but when sin fractured everything, now it's a competition between man and woman. And so it is a, I want your role, you want my role. Like, and it's a back and forth. And again, that's not sustainable. It's not healthy. And I think we have to, I can't go out and change the culture, but what I can do is create a culture in my home that will change what the way my sons are looking for their wife and the way my daughters are looking for their husbands. And then we start there. But I do think there's some fear. I think, you know, there's always, well, you got to finish college first. You know, it's like when people used to say, well, you know, I'll have kids when we can afford it. Well, good luck.
Yeah, right.
With that.
Oh, geez.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. And I think sometimes it's like, well, I'm not mature enough. To me, when my wife and I got married at 22 years old, we didn't have any money. We took out, you know, I took out every student loan I could take out to pay for things. I sold insurance at a bank, and I went to the president of the bank and was like, hey, we want to buy a house. And he was like, yeah, we'll give you a mortgage. We'll put a balloon on it, but we'll give you one. Uh-huh. And so you go through all these things, but we grew together. We matured together.
Yep.
I became a man. She became a woman as we grew together. And it's something beautiful about that. Flaws and all.
Yep.
And so I just would encourage, I don't encourage my kids. I don't encourage my kids to put it off. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not a dad that's telling my girls, you're never going to date. Mm-hmm. I'm a dad that's saying, when you do date, there's a certain type of man that you need to look for. And my prayer is that I've modeled that. So she knows.
Yeah.
And the same with my sons, that my wife has modeled that. So they know.
Yeah. I think overall, I mean, just thinking about like the culture and everything, you know, as I think about that, I think there's just an overall commitment. Like, we don't need to commit to anything.
Yeah,
it's such an instant culture where we get instant gratification. Mm-hmm. And as soon as we're not being gratified, we dump that and go to something new. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. And that's, you know, and there is something also to be said about, you know, when you say I do and you are legally married, the fact that it's supposed to be difficult to get out of that, you know, like if we're not entering into marriage, I just feel like it offers an escape hatch that's not supposed to be there in the mm-hmm. relationship. Right. And so there are folks that in the back of their mind, they're always saying, well, if he does so and so, or, you know, does this or she does this, you know, I can you know, cut bait and run and we can be done. Mm-hmm. And I just, that is such relationally such an unhealthy place to live. And I think back to tie into what, you know, Andrew, what you've written about, it's, it also creates a place just for sort of absenteeism, mm-hmm. you know, within the parental role and with dads not being there. So, yeah, I'm just, you know, I'm concerned for, we talk about our young men a lot. I'm concerned for our young people right now that, particularly, I guess this, I'm concerned if they have parents who are telling them to get life all squared away and straightened up before they go and make decisions. It's like, you know, no, to your point, get married, mm-hmm. Get married, have children. It accomplishes something in you that nothing else will do. You will see, you will, as we all have in this room, you will see God show up in unique and amazing ways. You get to be, you know, humbled, on a regular basis and reminded of like all the places that you fall short, which is good too. Cause my concern for people that are putting off responsibilities like that for a long period of time is they are not shown where they fall short. They are oftentimes permitted to live in a reality where every decision they make is fine. And, you know, that they haven't made a misstep or there is no correction to be made. And then, I can only imagine, cause I've seen it in places where it's like when they do decide to enter into a relationship and they're in their 30s or whatever, they are just shocked. They're absolutely shocked, by the relational trials that they enter into and that, you know, other people don't think, that they, you know, their junk smells like roses all the time, you know, and there's just that's a hard wake up call. I think so. This is like a sub theme on our show. Get married young, have kids, do it. We can't say it enough.
Yeah. And look, what we're also not saying is, that 100% of the time that's going to be work out great.
Yeah.
But most of the time,
mm-hmm. yeah,
it will.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it does, it does create, I became, when my parents divorced, I was 14 and I had to become a man a lot quicker because of just some things that were going on. Moved in with my brother when I was 17, a senior in high school. And there was, but when I got married and now I have a mortgage, now I got to think about both of us. Now I got to think about when a child comes, and now every decision I make, it doesn't just affect me.
Yeah.
Now it affects all of us. And now it affects my wife and six kids.
Yes.
You know, now it affects everything that goes into that. And it has made me a better man. It's made me a more calm man. It's made me a more protective person. It's made me not, you know, maybe before marriage and before kids, I would kind of just let things roll off and not be, you know, be like, oh, it's no big deal. But now it's like, no, I got, if you step into this area or you cross this line, now we got a problem.
Yeah.
You know, versus I just live for me. You know, I just make decisions for me. And I just think it's unhealthy. The longer you live a life where everything revolves around you, the worse things are going to go. But if you immediately put things in your life where now I'm living for the people in my home, I'm living for my wife. I'm living for my kids. I'm doing things. I have a mission every day that I get up. There's something beautiful about it. My granddaddy's still living today because every day he has a mission.
Yeah, that's good.
At 92 years old, he still gets on his tractor. Like he has a mission. Yeah. Now he's making breakfast for my grandmama because she can't do it. Like there's a mission behind that. Mm-hmm. And there's a purpose that you just do not get. You just do not get with, now, would my wife, the other night, four of our kids were gone. So we had the two youngest. And I'll be honest, I just wanted to order Domino's and sit on the couch. And my wife was like, are we not going to go out? And we're in a small town. There's very few choices. And I was like, but, you know, Duke is two. And he just, it's just not great. It's not a great experience when you go out to eat with a two-year-old, especially when our older ones aren't there to help.
Right.
And I'm like, we're old now. So, but we ended up going and ended up being fine. But those are the moments of like, I needed to do that. And I did not want to do that. Mm-hmm. And I looked at my wife, I was like, I'm not changing. I have goat poop on these pants and I'm wearing these pants to wherever we go. I just need you to know that. And we made the effort and we went out and so it is there is a beautiful thing about, because if it had just been me, I'd have got Domino's and I'd have sat alone in my house wishing that I had a wife and kids to share things with. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I think there's a beautiful thing even in the messiness and the sometimes the frustration that comes with that.
Yeah. Andrew, I'm curious, man. Talk to me about the community that surrounds your family. The people that, because I have a strong, I'm probably right on this. You've been intentional about the second line of defense for your family, people that are the additional men and people that are pouring into your kids and supporting your wife and doing all those sort of things. How have you made those decisions? Who are those people? What is that? Cause I'm also assuming you're traveling, you yourself are traveling a fair amount and you're out. If you're speaking, we all got to have that other tribe in our life to help do that. How have you formed that? What's that look like for you?
Yeah, for us, I mean, first off, the men in my life, I mean, I meet every Monday morning with a group of dudes that are kind of in the same space as me professionally. And so we meet every Monday and come together. We, you know, meet for 45 minutes, look at scripture, pray, you know, that kind of thing. I'm now meeting one-on-one with a dude every Tuesday. I'm meeting on Thursday mornings with another group of guys. All this is via Zoom. You know, we're not, because I got 6 kids, I can't be going and doing all this, but, I got friends still in Knoxville that I talk to, or and my wife has friends there. We have family close by here where we're at. And we also have a group of folks that, you know, the homeschool community is a amazing. I told you I was Amish-ish. Yeah. So homeschool community is great. And so we are able to do things with families during the day that a lot of, you know, that if you're in more of a traditional setting of school, you're not able to do. And we're all in similar walks of life, you know, and so some of those folks are farmers around here. Some of those folks work from home or whatever it may be. I think it is important to have community. I have my brothers. My two brothers are best friends of mine and are always there. If I needed them for anything, they would come running. But it's being intentional in those moments. When I travel, part of, you know, anybody that wants me to come speak, part of the deal is they know that if I'm flying, a child or my wife is coming with me. Mm-hmm. That's just it's a requirement. I just don't travel alone if I can. And it gives them that opportunity to branch out and you know, some excitement. What I'm trying to do is not create an environment in my home where my family hates the God that I serve.
Yeah,
because that God takes me away all the time.
There you go.
And so you have to be intentional. I've seen it happen way too many times where you think you're doing good and godly things and your family is paying the price for it. And so we're not going to do that. We have a great community of folks. We had a really strong, great community in Knoxville. We moved back to my wife's hometown a little over a year ago. And so still building that out, but we have found some great folks here that will, you know, if we need them, they're coming.
And Andrew, I just also have to wonder, because I've got a group of pastors that I talk with and I meet with regularly, and we're kind of got this constant text chain going. And part of a frequent part of our conversations are these very public failures of ministry professionals. It's a kind of a sick joke, but we just kind of say like, hey, wonder who it'll be this week, right? Like there just feels like this constant, you know, and you get under the hood a little bit of what's behind those failures, infidelity, you know, those sort of things. And so, sometimes it's financial, sometimes it's relational. And it seems like there's these guys that they don't even have any accountability structures in place. They don't have anybody. For you taking your wife along traveling or a kid along traveling. Can I just ask you, is that seems like maybe a protective, an intentional protective move for you?
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, first off, I'm a loner. Like, you know, I think because of what I do, a lot of people just assume I'm an extrovert. I can turn that on. Mm-hmm. But when I go travel, I would be absolutely miserable often. Because I just go sit in my room. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, sitting in your room the devil can use that.
Yeah.
And so when there's a, you know, one of my kids with me or my wife with me, it's first off, it's more fun. Second off, it gives them an opportunity to see what I do and be a part of what I do. And thirdly, selfishly, it does create this accountability. Like I'm not going to go do some nonsense, because I'm in a, you know, as Jay-Z said back in the day, a different area code, you know, that's a deep cut.
I love it. We all got it in this room. Thank you very much.
that a country boy from rural Tennessee, you know, Jay-Z somewhere is going, what are you talking about? But seriously, I do think there's a lot of nonsense that can happen if you're not careful.
Yeah.
And when you're serving and when you're, I hesitate to even serve, and that sounds egotistical. When you're doing a job, and I kind of get to be a professional Christian because of the job that I do.
Sure.
If my personal walk is not where it needs to be, then my professional Christianity means nothing. Mm. And so we have to include the folks around us. I want them to love the God that I serve. Mm-hmm. But also it is creating those. It's the same thing, you know, people threw shade at Billy Graham or Mike Pence because they wouldn't have meetings, you know, with female alone. And then they make that awful, you know, like, oh, they think every woman's going to jump their bones. No, it's just saying like, I'm not going to create, especially in today's culture, I'm going to do everything I can not to create those optics. And it's hard. It's hard to do. But as best we can, I'm going to be traveling here soon. And just because the way it works, no one can go with me. And, you know, and it's, so how, what am I creating as I'm gone to make sure that you know, I'm checking in with folks and doing those things. Because I do want to make sure that, the family back home, knows their dad and husband is doing well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amen.
So Mark Hyde has another comment. He did say, apparently he has all of the questions, definitely a podcaster problem. He's a fellow podcaster. But this, he says, Beth and I were talking about this just the other night. If our kids stay home after high school and don't go to a Christian college, how would you encourage them to go find a spouse, especially if they just stay at the same church?
Yeah, I would encourage them to, first off, volunteer in the nursery. Always encourage that. You'll meet great folks there. And that's coming from a former kids pastor. Uh-huh. We just need people volunteering in the nursery.
Please help your kids pastor.
And then I would say, I mean, here's the thing. Like, I went to college. My wife went to college. If you ask my kids right now, and I gotta figure out how to tamp this back, but they'll be like, there's no way I'm going to college. I'm like, okay, I think I've overcorrected a little bit on that. But I do think I'm always, even now, I'm watching. I mean, I'll say things, especially to my oldest boy. I'll go, hey, I saw you talking to her. You know, y'all seem to have similar interests. What? And just really trying to get to make sure we're like all on the same page here. You know, even with my daughters you know, it's got to be a little bit different because there was a time where I would joke with my oldest daughter about a particular boy at church. And then it got back to me from my wife, like, hey, you know, she's not seeing this as a joke. You need to stop. And I was like, okay, well, noted.
Sure.
But really trying to be intentional about how are we creating community? Because I'll be honest, I don't want it to be left up to dating app. Mm-hmm. You know, I got one little girl that she's like, I don't want to lose my last name. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, I know some people with our same last name that we're not kin to, so I'll do what I can. But they have a lot of boys, so maybe we can work that out. But just trying to let them know that their dad's intentional in and hey, we need to be looking for those things. I need you to be thinking about, we're not going to date just to date. That's not healthy. It's celebrated from the culture because it's trying to, you know, the grass is greener on the other side. It's always the next thing and the next thing. And I'm like, you know, sometimes the person the Lord puts you in your life checks all the boxes. You just don't know it yet. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a beautiful thing too. So I would just encourage them to, you know, look in the church, look in communities that have similar value systems, look in families that have similar value systems. Mm-hmm. That's not arranged marriages. That is just, hey, we don't want this to be a train wreck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's just wisdom.
And it will be a train wreck if you do not have similar value systems. Like that's just the reality. Mm-hmm. And believe me, I dated some that Lord knows it would have been a train wreck, from both parties. Had we joined our families together, it would not have gone well. And I think that, you know, sometimes it's just, you know, finding those opportunities.
Yeah. So Andrew, I wonder if, you know, if I like to try to have these checkpoints, I guess, with, especially as my boys are getting older and they can offer me, I consider sometimes some helpful feedback on my, on my parenting, on the examples. Here's what definitely do every teenager and even down, what they definitely have is a radar for my own hypocrisy, right? Like they pick up whenever it's one of those, like, do as I say, not as I do kind of moments, right? Like, they're not buying that anymore. And they're so quick to point that out. And usually my wife is in the same room at the same time. And it just really makes for a fun learning experience for me. But I do wonder, like, hey, if you're looking on the kind of the dashboard of hero, ghost, villain, how am I doing? Is that a conversation we can be having with our children? Is there, how do we check in with them on that? Cause I, I'm, I might be the only one in this room. I do lie to myself on occasion. I do have blind spots. And I do mislead myself on like how well I'm doing in those areas. What do you think that looks like, Andrew? What does that look like for you? How have you kind of advised and kind of doing these checkpoints to get real with your own family about how they see you and how they're experiencing you?
I'll give you one example. I was recording for a upcoming Bible study that's going to be coming out in the next couple of months. And my son was helping because the guy had to send a camera to me to record it. And my son loves videography. So he's helping set it up. And as I'm reading what I wrote, my son literally behind the camera is like, yeah, you don't do that.
Oh, man.
And I was like, oh, cut. You know, and I was like, go to your room. No, I didn't. We were like zooming with the producer and he started laughing. And I was like, look, that was a moment to say, yeah, I mean, there's plenty of things I write about and teach about that I struggle with and could do much better. You know, I grew up in a home where there wasn't a lot of lovey-dovey hugs, you know, like my dad, that's just not him. And I've inherited that. And my wife needs that. So there's things that I can be better that way. Like there's times where I could be a much better encourager to my son and not so hard on my son that I don't really struggle with my daughters. And so being able to sit down and have those honest conversations, and we've had those, sometimes it's been after, you know, I stepped in it and it was kind of that moment of, I'm sorry, and let's talk it through. And other times it has been, they point out, like you said, the hypocrisy, and you just have to sit and go, you know what, you're right.
Yeah.
And I need to work on that. And I need to get better at that. But if we're honest in those moments, my hope is that one day my kids will be able to say, you know, I do. Yeah. Daddy might've raised his voice or he might've did this or did that, but I do remember him sitting with me and like actually apologizing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want them to. One thing that my kids will be able to say is my daddy always told me he loved me. Mm-hmm. And that's not, look, I love my dad, but that's not something I can say. And so we're trying to change things for them, understanding that we're broken vessels as well. But I would encourage it, man, as hard as it is, as uncomfortable as it is, sit down with them, especially as they get older. And just say, hey, how am I doing? How did I do this week? And let's have that honest back and forth and go from there. Yeah. But I think that's really going to be much more meaningful as they get into those, you know, 12-year-old, 13, you know, kind of into that age where you can, I've sit down with some of my kids, like when they're 7 or 8, and I'll say a word and they're like, I don't know what that means. And I'm like, yeah. Well, I don't know. Okay. Well, how'd I do? They're like, I don't know. What are we doing? Let's go watch TV.
Yeah.
And so when they're older, you can have a little bit more meaningful conversations. And if you get those opportunities, that's like when they travel with me, you know, those are great opportunities to have those conversations.
Yeah. Nothing quite like that one-on-one time, which feels like, especially for you, Andrew, and all of us with our larger families, you got to fight for that. Like, it's like, that's a fight to find definitely. It. So when you do, it's sacred time for sure. So. Awesome. Yeah. Andy, what do we got next, my friend?
So we have the...
Now it's time for Dudes and Dads Pop Quiz.
Fantastic.
All right. So if you've never joined us, the Pop Quiz is a time where we just pepper Andrew with questions that have nothing to do with the book, nothing that he could actually even prepare for. And we're going to go ahead and bring Mark on because Mark always has the great opening question.
And by the way, whereas we're learning more Mark's non-verbal cues, I can see it in his eyes when he's queued up. It's like hungry like the wolf over there. So Mark, fire away with the Dudes and Dads Pop Quiz first question.
I've been waiting to ask this question for a week.
Oh boy.
Is a hot dog a sandwich or is it its own category of taco style food?
Oh, wow.
I wouldn't call it a sandwich. I definitely wouldn't call it a taco style food either. I'd call it American and a staple. That's what I would call it.
Okay.
So not. So if it were a sandwich, you said it's not a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. I wouldn't call it a sandwich.
I don't know.
But I wouldn't call it a taco style food either.
I agree with Andrew on this one. I don't even know what I would call it. Like, it's not. It's neither. It has a bun, not I mean, but not a sandwich bun.
It's its own category, much like jazz and other things that are American. That makes sense. Okay, yes. Fantastic. Yeah. Andrew, I'm going to ask you a favorite vacation you have ever taken.
Oh man, I think I have to say this because my wife ever hears this. But seriously, when we found out we were pregnant with Duke, our fifth, we went to Hawaii, just me and my wife and little Duke in the womb.
Yes.
And we went for 12 days.
Oh, wow.
And that was by far like, probably the best scenery we've ever seen. No doubt, had she not been pregnant, another kid would have been brought into the world. You know, those kind of things. So that was great. That may be too much, but I would say that. And then a close second would be 2 years ago, we went, and a friend of mine has a place in Oak Island, North Carolina, and we stayed there for a week. And that was just really, really precious. It was great.
As in the mystery of Oak Island, there's a whole TV show about it.
I used to like that, but then the problem was every time that they would like, it would just always end in a cliffhanger and you're like, no, this is, you're
it,
just,
cl- it was five seasons of cliffhangers. I can't emotionally hang on to that.
I can't do that.
Yeah. That's a historically rich place. Okay. All fantastic.
Right. All right. So if you were stuck on a desert island, what would be one thing that you would bring with you? And it's not going to be your wife or kids, just a tactile, something that's going to be practical for you. What are you bringing with you? I mean, obviously your wife and kids are practical. I'm not saying
right. That'd probably be the reason why I was stuck on the desert island. I would say, probably a sleeping bag, just because I know in a desert, I guess at night it gets cold, right? And I'm a 90-year-old man on the inside. I'm cold right now. And so the thought of being somewhere where I cannot get warm just bugs me. So I would make sure that I have things to be warm and then I figure the rest out.
Okay. Marky Mark.
Okay. You have the ability to turn invisible, but only while you're screaming at the top of your lungs. How do you use this to commit a crime?
Screaming at the top of my, if I was screaming at the top of my lungs, I would be invisible. And how would I use it to commit a crime? Okay. I would, to be honest, man, I'll let the Southern redneck come out of me. I would go to the local Ford dealership, and I would scream to be invisible, and I would get the keys to the biggest dually they had, and I would drive off the lot.
There we go.
Yeah, that's probably what I would do.
There we go.
All right.
Okay. fantastic. Andrew, let's see here. I'm wondering about the scariest situation you have ever been in. What is the scariest thing that has ever happened to you?
Yeah. So I used to work at I used to work at the University of Tennessee, and we were part of my job there. I worked in the admissions office, and we had a group of students come, and we were trying to get them acclimated. So part of that acclimation was they had a summer program. I had been whitewater rafting so many times. I'm not a great swimmer, but I was so confident because I'd been so many times. And when I have a life jacket on, I feel like a Superman.
Right. Yes.
And so we took these students who I would say 90% of the ones on my boat could not swim. and I was telling them the whole time, they'd never been. And I tell them the whole time, there's nothing to worry about. It's so much fun. Our guide, actually, because they were so busy, he had come out of retirement. So he was an older dude. Mm-hmm. And this was his first trip in like a few years. And I'm telling everybody in our boat, it's fine. And literally the first rapid we hit, I went under. Oh. I went out.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
man. And lost my paddle. And I'm going through all the safety things, you know, the safety things that you don't pay attention to. Yes. I'm a rule follower. So I was like, keep your head up. And my hind end was hitting so many rocks. And I thought, why haven't they grabbed me yet? and I swallowed so much water, and I just like, I'm like going, is this how it ends for me? Like, yes. God, please don't let me drown. That is like the worst. Like I would, that's like my worst fear.
Yeah.
Man. And when they finally caught up to me, this old burly man, he had a white beard, white chest hair, a lot of it, pulled me out of the water and he caressed my head to his chest.
Oh,
because I know he was, he thought I've come out of retirement. I killed this guy. And then I burped really loud and that was our moment. But I was terrified, man. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely terrified.
Yeah.
I thought that was it.
Oh man. Okay. All right. My last question is going to be, if you had somebody following you around all the time, what task would you give them to do? So like an assistant, a personal assistant that just follows you around all the time, what task would you give them to do?
I'd scratch my back. that would, yeah.
All right.
That is the weirdest personal assistant relationship that I've ever
known.
I don't know if I'd be allowed to pay them.
What's the setup?
It would go to your wife. I mean, your wife. Yeah. Maybe that's your personal assistant, but just your wife. So.
Okay, Mark, your last question, and what maybe will be the weirdest one. We'll see. Here we go.
All right, last question. If animals could talk, which species would be the most judgmental, and what would they say about your outfit?
What would they say about what?
About what you're wearing? About your current outfit?
Well, I think they'd appreciate that, obviously. But
good.
I would say most judgmental. I'll just look at the animals that we have. So we have two horses. We have three goats. We have a pig and a donkey. Out of those, 100%, the donkey is the most judgmental.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. I called it.
Yep. It's the name.
It does.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
Most judgmental. I guess my final question will go, you know what? We're going to do a sandwich question because every once in a while we have to.
I like that one.
Andrew, if there were to be a sandwich named after you, what is on that sandwich? What is the Andrew? If you're going into the store and they're like, hey, we've named a sandwich after you. What do you think? what's on it?
Yeah, I'm such a boring guy when it comes to sandwiches, man. I just like very simple stuff, but it would have bacon and ketchup and bread. That would be my sandwich.
At least it's not just a hot dog.
Yeah,
Andrew is the hot dog.
Thank you. And it is a little weird that he's putting ketchup and bacon together.
Try it, man.
Okay.
All right.
We'll give it a whirl.
All right, we'll try it.
Well, hey, Andrew, congratulations. You have successfully passed the Dudes and Dads pop quiz. Well done. Well done, sir. We're grateful for you hanging with us. Yeah. Well, hey, Andrew, thanks for hanging out with us, man. We're going to make Andrew embarrassingly easy to find on the internet. We'll link all of this.
Yeah, man.
All of his good stuff onto our website, dudesanddads.com. Hey, you can also shoot us an email if you want to over at dudesanddads@gmail.com. dudesanddadspodcast@gmail.com. Or you can leave us a voicemail, which we love those. Those are great.
You can. That number is 574-501-4467.
Fantastic. So, guys, be sure to check out all of Andrew's good stuff. The book, all the resources, his next highly anticipated speaking engagements all across this fine country of ours. We'll make that all that available over at dudesanddads.com. So, thanks for hanging out with us. And until next time, friends, we wish you grace
and peace.